He doesn't share.
Can't no throwing stuff from the back.
You just started up there.
See everything. Okay. All right. So we're going to be doing the Sabbath, and if we're thinking that this is some just like antiquated day that the Jews celebrated that was part of the Ten Commandments that didn't make it into the cut for Christianity and stuff like that, then I think we need to broaden our understanding of the concept of Sabbath, and we're going to see this as kind of like a biblical theme that ultimately Jesus fulfills. And so that's what we're going to be looking at this morning. But Chester, would you mind opening us up with a word of prayer?
Thank you, Heavenly Father, for waking us up this morning, getting us here safely. Please bless our Bible study and help us learn what you have us learn. We love you, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
All right, here's a revised schedule of what we're looking at, and Russ can let me know. I'm pretty sure it's right. So the last class of the segment is going to be Wednesday, April 8th. And Andy Cantrell will be here Sunday, March 22nd, but we still have our classes that morning, right?
Yeah,
okay. So that means that we're not going to have the class on that Wednesday of that week during the gospel meeting. So we're going to go from Sunday to Sunday. And because everything got shifted forward a little bit, I'm out of town in Las Vegas from the 1st through the 5th. The 1st through the 5th. And so that means suddenly Daniel or somebody has to teach booze. And I didn't tell you that until right now. So, anyways, that's kind of the plan for that. And right now we're finishing up this idea of the foundations for the biblical feasts. And the Sabbath is, again, something that's connected to the feast, and we'll talk about how that is in just a second. We'll remind ourselves of a few things about that. But remember this chart here. This is our calendar kind of woven together with the Jewish calendar. Ours is solar. Theirs was lunar because it followed the full moon and stuff like that. But do you guys remember in the Old Testament it says for the Jews to come three times a year to Jerusalem to worship? What was the reason for the three times when there's seven feasts?
They were all grouped together.
Yeah, they're grouped together. So, like, right now, we're together right now, right? But we're kind of, like, doing two things when we come together today, like Bible class and then service or whatever. And so when the Jews would come together, they would get Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits done in a course of 8 days. Then they would have the one trip for Pentecost. That's the only soul thing that they would go to for that trip. And then the third one, whether it was just atonement in tabernacles or it was all three of these and it was scattered over the course of about 21 days, then that would have been their last pilgrimage for the year. And so they go that many times for that. Okay. The other way of looking at this, you've got all of these, the dates and stuff. When we get to first fruits, I'll tell you why there's a question mark with the first fruits one that was during the week of Passover. One thing I didn't mention last time is that for the Jewish feasts that have the closest parallel to American holidays, if you were to put Passover and Unleavened Bread together, that was their Independence Day. That was their 4th of July. Trumpets was the Jewish New Year. And we'll talk about why that is when we get to that feast. And then booths would have been like the equivalent of our Thanksgiving. Because that was the festival where they were actually commanded to be thankful and to rejoice. Although you would have seen them be thankful in the other feasts if they were doing it the right way. But this is a special emphasis on that one, as they were remembering how the Lord took care of them in the wilderness. Okay. Any comments or questions by way of reminder from that stuff? Okay. Let's just start out with these questions again. What were the purposes of the Jewish feasts? We've been talking about three purposes that they had.
Remember what God had done for them.
Good. National unity.
And a memorial.
What was that?
Memorial.
Yeah, memorial to remember God's
past.
Yeah, and then foreshadowing. So there's a sense in which, when you look at the first purpose, this is looking backward at what God has done in the past, and then there's a sense in which they're looking forward, looking towards what Jesus was going to do. And so that's those three things have kind of become the purposes of our class to try to see how that applies to us. So since we're talking about Sabbath today, how did we say that the Sabbath related to the seven feasts?
they started and ended with the Sabbath.
Okay, good. So a lot of the feast days themselves involved like an extra Sabbath. You see that on the worksheet on page 6. There were 7 additional Sabbath days during the feasts. So that's under point 1B. So the first and last day of unleavened bread, that's 2 extra. Feast of Weeks or Pentecost was an extra one. Feast of Trumpets was another one. Day of Atonement was one. And then the first and last day of the Feast of Booths. So because of the Jewish festivals, you'd have an additional 7 Sabbaths, what the Jews would sometimes call High Sabbaths, during the year to celebrate those things. How else does the Sabbath relate to the 7 feasts?
Sabbath is 7. Does that have something to do with it?
Yeah, I think so. Like the dates are like sometimes the 14th day of the month, and that's divisible by 7, and there might be connections with that. What was that?
We're considered 7. The 7 is 59.
Yes, so you'd have the 52 regular Sabbaths during the year, and then an additional 7 because of the specific days of the feast that would involve Sabbaths.
Unless it fell on that.
Yeah, and then it was like a super Sabbath or something.
One way in which they relate is just the same purposes of those feasts are often seen in the purpose of the Sabbath.
Right. Right. The idea of Sabbath is rest, like we'll talk about, restoration, rejuvenation, all that sort of thing. And these feasts have some kind of connection to those ideas. So like Passover is celebrating leaving Egypt, which is harsh slavery, and then talking about the rest that God gave them. And then we talked about this last time, that there's different ways that each festival sort of talks about the concept of rest from other angles. We'll dive into the idea of Sabbath and then see how that relates to what Jesus has ultimately done today. So today we're going to talk about the meaning of Sabbath, the instructions and the purposes for the Sabbath that God gave in the Old Testament, and then how Jesus fulfills it. And I want to try to quickly get to this part, because we're going to break up into groups and the texts that we're going to be looking at. We'll take a little longer to read for those parts. Okay. Any comments or questions about that as we start looking at this? Okay, so let's start out by talking about the meaning of Sabbath. So the Hebrew word for Sabbath is Shabbat or something like that. Anybody know what this word means?
Rest.
Yeah, rest. Any other synonyms you guys can think of? No. Okay, so the words mean intermission, to cease doing something, or to rest. Now, there's other words in the Old Testament that are not Shabbat that still relate to this idea of rest. And when God is getting ready to bring the Israelites into the Promised Land, or at least he starts talking about that with Moses, Exodus 33:14 says, "My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest." That's not the same word for Shabbat, but it's related to it. They're used together a lot, or the ideas are used together a lot. And so what's associated with rest in this passage here? God's presence. So if you don't have God's presence, you don't have true rest. Now, could somebody just kind of mechanically take the day off on Saturday and not be focused on God and therefore not experience true Sabbath? Yeah. So there's something more to it than that. It's not just I'm not working anymore, but it's God being in my life in one way or another, and somehow that gives me rest. And in this particular context, what does he mean by giving them rest here as he's talking to Moses? Where are they going? To the Promised Land. Now, we're going to break up into groups in a few moments, and one group is going to have some stuff about how the Promised Land was like a shadow of Sabbath. And so, just keep that in the back of your mind for whenever we get there. Alright, so, if that's the idea of Shabbat or Sabbath, what would the opposite of it be?
Work on your animal.
Okay, good. Yeah, like, there's no help, but it's like harsh work. So, no rest from harsh work, like slavery. What about the life in Egypt? Remember, this goes back to the idea of Passover and how God was giving them rest, not just one day out of the week, but there was a sense in which their whole lives were going to have a greater kind of rest than they had before that. And by way of contrast, Revelation 14:11 And the smoke of their torment goes up forever and ever, and they have no rest, day or night, these worshippers of the beast and its image, and whoever receives the mark of its name. All right, so if you have God with you, here you have a sense of rest. If you worshipped the beast, which I think in the book of Revelation is worshipping the worldly powers and the allurements that those things have to the extent that you start giving up your convictions of truth, then that means that you're going to end up being somebody who has no rest at all. So you have God, you have Sabbath. You don't have God, you don't have Sabbath. Any comments or questions about that as we're looking at this? So I think in the Old Testament, God was teaching them these concepts of that He's the one that gives rest from labor. And He's doing this throughout the Old Testament in these cycles of seven that would have been like visual reminders of this idea that God can provide it for them. So try to think about the cycles of seven that you have in the Old Testament related to Sabbath. So every 7 days, they have the weekly Sabbath. Every seventh month, they have the Feast of Trumpets. Every seventh year, they have the Sabbath year. I want to notice something. Go over to 2 Chronicles, chapter 36. But I think Mason's going to talk about this in the last class, so I'm not going to say too much about this right now. But the Sabbath year, anybody know what some of the things were commanded for the Sabbath year?
There was no farming or anything going on.
Right, you just kind of like let the land rest. And you don't do any kind of extra kind of plowing and stuff like this. We'll talk about why maybe they would have commanded that. But of all the feasts in the Old Testament, one of the ones that we can be absolutely sure that they did not keep was the Sabbath year. Look at 2 Chronicles 36, verses 20 and 21. He took them into exile in Babylon, those who had escaped from the sword, and they became servants to him and to his sons until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed its Sabbaths, all the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. So when the nation of Israel is being brought into exile, what's one of the prime reasons that it's happening according to 2 Chronicles?
At least lengthwise, it was because they didn't keep the Sabbath year.
Yeah, they weren't keeping the Sabbath year. They kept working the ground over and over and over again. And it's kind of ironic. Like, you've got a God that takes you out of Egypt, where you were slaves, and then you, like, don't want to honor these time periods where God is trying to give you rest. Well, why would that be the case? We'll talk about that in a little bit. So that's every seventh year, and then every seventh Sabbath year was the year of Jubilee. So, can you imagine living in this culture, and, you know, a lot of people probably would have lived till they were 50 and beyond, so you would have lived to see all of these things take place. What was God teaching them as He gave them every Sabbath day off work? And what was He teaching them every seventh month when it was a special Sabbath? And what was He teaching them every seventh year? What would this have done for the Jewish people as it was looking forward to the Messiah? What does God want to give you?
Rest.
So, in learning about these things, we start to see some things about the character of God compared to people that might want to worship the beast, because it's really alluring and all those kinds of things. But God is greater than all the other things that you could worship. Okay, so that's the meaning of Sabbath. Anything else you guys want to say about that? All right, just spend a little bit of time on this. In the Old Testament, what were the instructions and the purposes for God giving the Sabbath? Now, I have some of these listed out here, but on the PowerPoint, I just narrowed it down to a few of them. But I want you to notice a few things that God commanded them on the Sabbath, for the weekly Sabbath. The first one was no ordinary work, and it didn't matter what season it was. Isn't that interesting? Have you guys noticed that? Look at Exodus 34. And look at verse 21. 6 days you shall work, but on the seventh day you shall rest. In plowing time and in harvest you shall rest. Do you suppose, depending on the economics and the size of your bank account at the time of the year, you might be especially tempted to break the Sabbath? Because look at the season that we're in right now. Like, we don't really have time to not work today. And so that, it was no ordinary work. And so no matter what season it was, also don't kindle a fire in Exodus 35. Don't pick up sticks. There's the story of the dude in Numbers 15 who was walking around picking up sticks. And then what happens to him?
Stoned.
He gets stoned. Have you ever looked at stories like that and gone, well, that just seems like really wrong that God would have something like that commanded? I think maybe one lesson from this is that God's standards of what matters to him are very different than ours. And if we have an emotional reaction against what God does, it's not because God is wrong. It's because our sense of what's right and wrong and honoring God is very off. And so this guy's picking up sticks on the Sabbath and he gets stoned for that. Also, Jeremiah 17:21, don't bear a burden, which was related to work and traveling and stuff like that. I think it's selling stuff. Okay, so those are the Sabbath instructions. We're going to come around and say a little bit more about that in just a second. But let me ask this question, and we'll discuss this one. What do you think was the purposes of, let's just start out with the weekly Sabbath. What purposes do you think God had in mind when he made this an instruction for them?
Be about trust.
Trusting in what sense?
So you're not going to do this work and trust that he's going to feed you, even though you haven't put the time into planting it, like you were just saying.
Yes.
It seems like the right thing to plant.
Yes.
So don't plant, so you trust him to do what seems to be the wrong thing.
Good. That's the first one. I'll go over to Exodus 16. This is when the instructions for Sabbath are first being given to the people. You see that God rested on the seventh day in Genesis, and then you don't really see the instructions for the Sabbath until you get to Exodus 16 when manna is coming down from heaven. Anybody know what the Hebrew word for manna is?
Bread from heaven?
Yeah, like what does the Hebrew word mean, though? Yeah, it means what is it? So like the in Hebrew, man who means they would see this and say, what is this? What is this? What is this? And then in John 6, when Jesus talks about how he's the bread that comes down from heaven, what are the Jews saying about him? Not word for word, but essentially they're saying, what is this guy? Like, who is this guy that's talking about eating his flesh and drinking his blood? Like, this doesn't make any sense. So when he talks about them trying to collect food on the manna that's coming down, what were the instructions for how they collected it?
You collect just enough for that day for
yes.
your family to eat.
Until
the sixth day.
Until the sixth day, and then what do you do? Then you can collect double so that you've got some for Friday and Saturday. What would happen on the other days if you collected more than you were supposed to, if it wasn't a Friday?
It would rot
the next day. So miraculously, somehow, it would rot on the Sabbath day. But look at Exodus 16, verses 27 to 30. On the seventh day, some of the people went out to gather, but they found none. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, the Lord has given you the Sabbath. Therefore, on the sixth day, he gives you bread for 2 days. Remain each of you in his place. Let no one go out of his place on the seventh day. So the people rested on the seventh day. All right, so on the seventh day, what are some of these people doing?
Looking for the manna.
Yeah, they're out hunting for more food. Why do you think they would have been doing that? I thought they already had the provisions.
They didn't believe what God had said in the first place.
Right. Can you imagine, like, I think we struggle with this because we've got, like, pantries and stuff in our house. Remember when in Matthew 6 when Jesus talks about the birds of the air and how, like, they don't have a refrigerator, but they don't worry? They don't have a storehouse of all this food. Like, every day a bird, like, gets up early in the morning, they don't have any food, and then they have to go out and find it. And God takes care of the birds. He was teaching the Israelites that you need to rely on him, and if he says to go do something and go gather the food, then go gather it. But if there's a day where he says not to for other reasons, in your greed and in your lack of trust for him, you might be tempted to violate that. So God was teaching them through all of this that he is providing for them. He's the one. If every 6 days you had to gather, and if you had leftover, it would like get rotty the next day. And then miraculously, one day out of the week, that never happened. What is it teaching you?
Depend on God.
Yeah, and God is the one taking care of you. Why does it get bad every other day of the week except for the Sabbath? So it would challenge their trust and their greed, and it would kind of root that out as they would continually do it. How do you build up a new kind of mindset? How do you change the way that you think about things? You have to do it continually and habitually. So God was having them do this habitually to let them know that God was the God of rest. God was the God that took care of you. So that's the first purpose for the Sabbath. Can you guys think of any other purposes for the Sabbath?
I don't know if this is on your list. One thing I think about is our attention and focus. So instead of being focused on our day-to-day routines, our self-serving, here's a moment where we can actually reflect on God and what He's provided for us.
Yeah, I think that's my fourth one. Yeah. So another one, the imitation of God's rest. God rested on the seventh day, therefore the Israelites will. So think about what Danny just said. That when the Israelites would keep this, it was a time for them to have a special, dedicated focus of time on God. It's called a holy convocation in Leviticus 23, verse 3. What does the word holy convocation mean again? Do you guys remember what the meaning of that word was?
It's a calling together.
Yeah, it's a calling together, or it's a rehearsal, or it's sometimes the word means it's a reading. And based on Leviticus 23, verse 3, you don't get a lot of other instances where it kind of shows this, I guess, except for maybe the synagogue worship that the Jews developed, maybe in captivity. But the idea of it being a holy convocation means that this would be a special time maybe for your family to gather together. I was listening to something this last week about a guy that lived in Jerusalem for a week, or for a year. And he said that every Friday night, there would be like sirens in Jerusalem that were blaring. Kind of like if you guys know tornado sirens, right? Okay, yeah. So like it would sound like that. And then like all the Jewish people would scatter to their homes. And the guy that lived there for a year was saying in this like interview sort of thing that he would walk down the streets with his wife every Friday night after all the Jews had gone inside. And he liked to walk down the streets because you could hear Jewish families singing together. And once the Sabbath started, the families kind of had their own little holy convocation to worship and to think about the things of God. Abby?
Just for like a modern way to look at this as well, we talk about all the time how we don't have time to read, or we don't have time to pray, or we don't have time to meditate. And it's not because those things aren't important, but we're busy with things that are important, feeding our families, providing for these families. And God just goes ahead and says, here, let me help you. Here's an entire day where you don't have to worry about providing, because I will provide. Use this time for that important thing.
Right.
You know, and I think that that's something important for us to think about as well, that providing for your family is important, but it doesn't make this any less important.
Right. You know? When people say things like, we don't have the time, do you suppose that that's one of the reasons the Jews didn't keep the Sabbath year? Well, we don't have the time. Like, we gotta keep the money going. Like, how are we going to take care of it? Didn't the weekly Sabbath every week teach you that God was the one that took care of you? Can't you therefore extend this principle out to an entire Sabbath year? And can't you extend this out to the year of Jubilee? And then can't you see glimpses of what the Messiah was going to come and do in all of this repetition that you guys had? But when people say today, therefore, well, I don't think I have the time to read my Bible as much as I have. Everybody's got the time. It's just a matter of whether or not you're trusting in God. And if your greed is getting in the way for you to not be able to do these things. But God forced them to teach them these things, to train them. Yeah.
Isaiah 58:13 says it's a matter of honor. Honoring God. God set this day apart. Genesis 2 said when He rested on the seventh day, He made that day sanctified. He sanctified it. He set it apart. And it's a matter of just honoring God's will.
Right.
Not doing our own will.
And again, like, can you imagine? We talk about this with going to the temple. Like, they're slaughtering the animals. They're cutting their throats. Have you guys ever seen a video, by the way, like online, of people actually sacrificing an animal? It's brutal. Like, the Jews did it all the time. Can you imagine, like, doing that every first day of the month, like we talked about last time, and like all the other sacrifices that they had? What were these methodical things that God commanded them? Well, what are they all looking forward to? Jesus being the Lamb of God. When it comes to the Sabbath, it's the same sort of thing. We've got this weekly thing that they're commanded to do, and it's all looking... So today when people debate, are we supposed to keep the Sabbath day? Are we not? And we're only talking about the seventh day of rest? it's missing what the point of the foreshadowing was. Janice?
In that Exodus 20 reference, 28-11, it starts out with the word remember. And I see this all through this, that they need to remember God, who He is, what He's doing,
right,
what He is doing now. And that's so important for us to remember. That's one reason it's so wonderful to be able to come together on the Lord's Day around this table and remember. We need to keep remembering.
So what did the weekly Sabbath help them remember then? That God created the world, right?
Yes.
Imagine that I get into this mindset that I always have to work. Who am I going to start to think kind of like the world relies on to get things done?
Yourself.
You. And if you're forced to stop and just not do anything, you can kind of see that the world continues when you're not doing anything. Because God is the one that created it. And so it would be a good reminder, that goes back to one of the purposes of the feast, it helps them remember what the Lord had done and stuff like that. Go over to Exodus 31 really quick. One of the purposes of the Sabbath was that it was a sign between God and Israel. And there are certain ancient societies that tried having a 8-day week. There's other societies that tried having a 10-day week. And the seven-day week has kind of become normal and stuff, but that wasn't always the case. Exodus 31, verse 13, says, "You are to speak to the people of Israel and say, above all, you shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and throughout your generations, that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you." There's something about this taking the day off that was very unique in the ancient world, and them doing this was going to be a sign that God was the God of these people. By the way, in the context of Exodus 31, what had been happening right before this for the previous six chapters? The tabernacle. What was the purpose of the tabernacle? God's dwelling place. In Genesis chapter 1, you've got the phrase, "and God said, and God said, and God said, and God said," and then what? How does that section end in Genesis chapters 1 and 2? God rested on the seventh day, right? In Exodus 25 to 31, you've got these instructions, "the Lord said to Moses, the Lord said to Moses, the Lord said to Moses." Where did God dwell in the beginning of creation? In the Garden of Eden. Where is he going to dwell now in Exodus? In the tabernacle. And both sections have this repetition of "the Lord said, the Lord said, the Lord said," and then they both end with the Sabbath. So God is trying to reconnect with His people, and there's all kinds of other things about that we're not talking about right now. all right. Final purpose of the Sabbath was to give rest and refreshment. They had been brought out of Egypt. And Deuteronomy 5 tells them that even if you've got like slaves that are in your nation, that they're supposed to get the same day off as well. Because remember that the Lord took you out of slavery, and so you're supposed to do that same thing for other people. All right, so you've got a God, unlike Pharaoh, who wants to give you rest and refreshment. He wants to give you this time to stop and meditate and reflect and think and all these. And the act of doing that gives you rest because you're thinking about God and being more in His presence in that way. Those are the purposes of the Sabbath. Anything else you would want to say about that? Let me say something briefly then about this. I think sometimes the Sabbath can get we can kind of think negatively about the Sabbath because of the conflicts Jesus had with the Pharisees on the Sabbath days. And so, when you look at these instructions for the Sabbath, how detailed are they?
Every aspect of life.
it's going to hit on every aspect of life, but does the Old Testament detail every situation?
No.
Yeah, it's very generic. So, when it says no plowing and no harvesting and stuff like that, what are the meticulous Jewish people who probably at first in these conversations were really concerned about pleasing God? What do you do when you don't have a ton of details about what you're supposed to do on the Sabbath? Yeah. They added 39 categories of laws on the Sabbath day. Well, and the reason was because the scriptures were too vague. If you want to try to make this more concrete, we've got to make up all of these different things and stuff like that. And one of the ironies with all of these man-made ideas is, what did it make the Sabbath into in the Gospels? This thing that was supposed to be for your rest and rejuvenation became what?
A burden.
A burden. Do you think that this can be a struggle for us? Are there any things that the Bible today is kind of vague about? And in that process, we try to come up with very strong opinions about things because we're uncomfortable with how vague the scriptures are. The biggest places that we're tempted to create traditions are the places in which God is vague. And so that became the problem with them. They perverted some of these things. And so whenever Jesus was doing stuff on the Sabbath... By the way, anybody happen to know how many people he healed on the Sabbath day? How many miracles of healing there were on Sabbaths?
I'm going to guess seven.
Yeah, that would be my
I wish there was. There's five.
Just because two of them weren't recorded.
Yeah. Or maybe it's because that's how many books Moses wrote. No, so Jesus broke the tradition, but he never broke the Sabbath itself. Okay. Anything you guys want to say? What time do we have? Okay, I think we're good with time. All right, let's just go ahead and do this then. I want to break up into three groups, and they're going to be like blob groups because it's not going to mesh too well. I don't know, whatever. So you guys, like your row, and then you guys all over here, you can be part of that too. That's great. And then
what's the point?
He's not to you yet, Chester.
A second. So then Russ's row back to Andy Baker. You guys are going to be group two. So you guys are group one. You guys are going to be looking at Luke 4. And then group two is going to be looking at a little bit longer text, Matthew 11:28 through 12:14. And then group three is going to be Danny up to Heather's kind of row. And so that includes Chester and his friend. And so group three's got Hebrews 3:16 through 4:13. And I want you guys to look in these passages and see, based on these ideas we've seen about Sabbath, how is it that Jesus was going to come and fulfill this idea of true Sabbath? So, you guys read the text, maybe a couple times or whatever, and then think about these questions that I have up here. And then if you've got any additional kind of thoughts and ideas too, make sure that you throw those into the conversation as well. So I'll give you guys a few minutes to look at those texts, and then we'll talk about what we see.
Oh, yeah.
This passage here in Luke chapter 4, this is in Luke's account when Jesus sort of kicks off his ministry after he's been tempted and everything like that. What prophecy is Jesus quoting when he reads in the synagogue? You guys are group one, right?
Yes.
Danny speaks for us.
Danny's
our spokesman.
Okay. So Danny.
Well, Mason referred to it the year of Jubilee. That what the prophecy that's coming out is the year of Jubilee.
Isaiah 61 is the year of the Lord's favor. And how does this passage in Isaiah 61 relate to the concepts of Sabbath?
It's really a prophecy about the year of Jubilee, which is kind of like the Sabbath cube.
Yes.
Multiplied by its own value three times. So it's a greater Sabbath than the regular Sabbath, and Jesus says that's what I'm here to do.
Okay.
To offer all of those things.
Right. So there's some people that have tried to figure out, like, when Jesus came, was it actually literally the year of Jubilee, too? And I don't know how much to make of that. But either way, metaphorically, he's fulfilling all of these kinds of things in his person. And so look at the second question, then. So he talks about how he's going to come to the poor, the captive, the blind, and the oppressed, and how he's going to help these people in the different ways that they need help. Did you guys think about people in the Gospel of Luke that fit those descriptions and how Jesus helped those people?
Yeah, I mean, this language, some of them are kind of obvious, like blind, but the other ones are, we would tend to think of them as metaphorical, but I think if you were in those situations, it wouldn't be a metaphor, it's your real life. If you're, you know, held, if you're in bondage to a demon that's possessing you, right, and it kind of rules over you and doesn't let you do anything you want to, or you're oppressed by some disease and you can't walk, you can't stand up straight, or you can't use your hands or your feet or whatever. I mean, those would feel like very real oppression.
Right. And so when Jesus would heal, like, the guy with the withered hand on the Sabbath day, and then the Jews said they had part of their 39 categories of laws for the Sabbath to help them feel like they could actually obey it in a concrete way, said that if you were a doctor, you couldn't help somebody unless it was a life or death situation. So when Jesus had the audacity to only speak, to make his hand come out like this. They thought that he was breaking the Sabbath when it was actually the best day of the week to do it. Because it was, you were giving people rest from the burden of this physical problem that they had. Okay, good. So there's more to say about all this. But group two. How does Matthew chapter 11, which is 11:28 through 30 is oftentimes used for invitations on Wednesday night and stuff. It's a good one. But how does it flow into chapter 12?
Russ, I'll let you to speak.
In 11, he speaks about real rest,
yeah.
Declares that he can provide that, and a light burden. And then it immediately flows into chapter 12, where you have these accusations about them violating the Sabbath, though all they were doing
right.
was simply taking what God had already provided right there in substance.
Right. Well, the ironic thing is that the disciples are the ones following Jesus, and therefore they're the ones kind of experiencing rest, where the Pharisees are meticulous about the literal seventh day, and they're the ones not experiencing rest because they're not with him. But when Jesus says, come all who labor and are heavy laden, and I'll give you rest, that's the idea of Sabbath, chapter 12 then has two stories right in a row about Jesus fulfilling what true rest looks like on the Sabbath day. Abby?
And I think it further solidifies the Jesus as God. Because
yes.
Jesus says, I will bring you rest. And then he talks about the Sabbath.
Yes.
It's like God and Jesus were bringing you rest all along.
Yes.
Jesus is bringing eternal rest, but it was already here.
Remember Exodus 33 with Moses? My presence will go with you and I will give you rest. Who in their right mind would stand up and say, come to me and I'll give you rest, unless it was God?
And rest of your soul.
Yes.
So it's more than just simply physical rest. The Sabbath was to provide.
Right. Yeah, all of this is looking to the spiritual realities that Jesus was going to fulfill. So therefore, then, when he heals the guy with the withered hand, we just talked about, all right, okay, so we don't have a lot of time. I want to get to group three. You guys have a little bit more stuff to look up. In what ways did the Promised Land feature the concept of Sabbath? And I ask you guys to look also at Joshua 24, Deuteronomy 6, and connect that to John 14. Did you guys do that?
In the Hebrews passage, it ultimately talked about rest frequently. That was a place where God will provide rest. And in Joshua and Deuteronomy talks about it's a land where God's provided homes that you did not build, land that you didn't toil, cisterns that are full for you.
Yes. Stop and think a little bit about the fact that when they entered the Promised Land, they didn't have to build any of their houses. Like, their dwelling places were already set up for them. Can you imagine conquering a land and you're like, we just defeated all these people, now we've got to build houses? No, you don't have to do that. In like manner, in John 14, when Jesus says, I go and prepare a place for you, when we get to heaven, are we going to have to, like, start building anything? It's all set up for us. What we have to do now is we have to conquest. We have to fight now. And then we get the rest later. But in the meantime, we get a taste of that rest in the spiritual kind of way, the rest from guilt and sins and all that kind of stuff. And so that's one way in which, like, the place that we're going, our Promised Land, it's got everything built for it already. Like, we don't have to build anything when we get there. Okay, so then also, what do we have to do in order to enter the true rest according to Hebrews?
Obey God, fear God, keep His commandments.
Good. Any other thoughts that you guys had on this one? This is in the context of the Word of God is living and active, it's like a two-edged sword and all that kind of... Why is that in the context? Well, what's going to help us do that? The conquest also has to be against our own sin. And we can't fall to disobedience in those ways. When it talks about the Israelites not entering God's rest, in the first 6 days of creation, all of them have there's evening, morning. Have you ever noticed how it says evening first and then morning and not morning first and evening? The Jews counted the days different. So there's evening, morning, evening, morning, evening, morning, except for the last day, Sabbath day. It's just kind of like a period of time that keeps going or something. And it's God's, it's the reality of God after He made everything. And then He says, you can enter into my presence now that I've created everything. And so that's the ultimate rest that the Promised Land was talking about. Okay, that's all we have time to talk about because that was the last bill. So on Wednesday we'll talk about Passover, and we'll do that for two classes.